This is In Focus, featuring interviews with our local newsmakers, information on community programs and politics, and the story on local current events. In Focus on Lake 88.
Welcome to another edition of In Focus. It is Wednesday, and that means it's time for Dr. Paula Stewart, our Medical Officer of Health, to drop by with an update on the local pandemic situation. Dr. Stewart, welcome back to Lake 88.
Thank you. Yeah, good to be here again.
Lots to cover once again. Let's get right into it. We'll talk first about the status of the COVID situation in LGL. Like the province, we're seeing sort of a slow improvement.
Yeah. Hospitalizations are down, and if you check the information we have on our website, it's not everyone who has COVID. It is the people who qualify for the PCR test at the assessment centers, and the numbers are starting out. It's very interesting. We sort of have a spurt, and then we sort of come down a little bit, but the spurts are lower than the earlier spurts, and so we're starting to come down. So I think. Yeah, it's good. We had another death, though. And I just, every time we get that reported, I think of the families. And it just reminded me, we talked last week about living alongside COVID and opening up to more opportunities and what can you do to reduce your risk and be able to enjoy more things. And I think if you're doing that, please think about those vulnerable people, because every single one of our deaths so far have been in people who either are unvaccinated or who have underlying chronic conditions. And the COVID infection just tips them over the top. So I think while you're thinking about what you're going to be able to do, think very much about those vulnerable people in your life and how we can create good life for them alongside being really careful that they don't get COVID.
There's been so many people reported who have gone to gatherings, gone to parties, yeah. Hung out at friends' houses and so on, thinking, oh, well, I'm young, it won't bother me or whatever. Then they bring it back to those yeah. people in their households or even on visits. And they think, it's not happening to me, but it's the effect that they can have on others. And that's yeah. exactly what you're talking about.
And even the gatherings where older people are there and people with chronic conditions. And so it's just, I think, just think about those people and what you can do to protect them.
Yeah, exactly. 10 outbreaks currently now. That number keeps going down as well.
Keeps going down, yeah. No, we sort of have 3 that are closing and 1 that's opening, so it's still a little bit. But and the congregate care, the long-term care retirement homes are really doing well. We have our nurses go over their infection control practices. And so it's the whole thing is starting to settle down, which is exactly what we wanted, right? We wanted to suppress the number of COVID infections so that we our services and our schools and our workplaces could all be open, and so that the healthcare system could be there when we needed it. So yeah, we're heading in the right direction.
Exactly. Even though we did get news that the surgeries at the Perth and Smith Falls District Hospital have been suspended until the end of this week, until next Tuesday, then they're going to make them up. And they say that's staffing directly due to COVID-19. So yeah. even though efforts are being made, there's just one example of what can happen.
Yeah. And it's about, we talked about that before, Omicron is so easily spread that more people become infected, and then it affects capacity in workplaces, including in hospitals. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Now, I want to talk to you about tomorrow. It's another big day in the province that
yes.
Many people are looking forward to. Ontario will further ease public health measures. First off, is that the right call?
So if you look at the numbers across the province, hospitalizations are definitely coming down. They're still at about the same level as the height of, I think, where we were with Delta in terms of when we get these surges. I think that as long as people are thinking out what they do when they go to places, and are thinking all the time about what can I do so that I'm not at risk and other people around me aren't at risk, I think it's okay. I think it's not a message that you should be forgetting precautions, that you should be thinking, oh, I have a cold, but what the heck, you know, the food premises are at full capacity, it's okay if I go. Like, that's not a one-to-one relationship. Mm-hmm. It's still about, and it is about trying to have opportunities for businesses and services to be able to function economically, to be viable. So there's that whole part of it. And then our responsibility is to make sure we're not going out when we're sick, to be fully vaccinated, to make sure that we're wearing our masks when we're there so that we can support them to be open. So I think it's that's the perspective that if we keep that, then it'll be okay.
Before we go over what is going to be opening up tomorrow, what do we have to do? What do we have to achieve to make it to the next stage?
Yeah, good. I think what the province is looking at is continuing the downward trend in terms of hospitalizations and ICUs, so that we can continue to have the healthcare system that we need for the people who need it. I think that's the major driver. I think they're also they're tracking deaths, death, and as I said, we had 5 and now we're down to 1. There's still one too many deaths as far as I'm concerned. But I think that that's really what they're tracking, is making sure that the healthcare system is going to be there for all of us when we need it. So, and each of us has, which I started with in terms of making sure that our vulnerable people, that we're doing what we can to protect them. That's a critical part of it. So I think that's a major indicator that they're looking at the provincial level.
What speaks to that too is the fact that they haven't put an end date on masking. That I think really that is a symbol, not only a symbol, but it's an effective tool. There's no doubt about it. But once you take off the masking, I think people will relax in so many other ways too. Whereas if you need to keep that mask on, it's something that really keeps everything top of mind.
Yeah. And if you think about the powerful things, the vaccine is a powerful thing that we can be doing. Like, what are the really significant big things that have an impact? Vaccine is absolutely one of them, getting your first, second, and your third doses now. And then the other one is a masking. And the third one, I think, is staying home when you're sick. Like, those are fundamental things that help to, at a very person level, influence whether or not a virus can be spread among people. So I think that the masking is critical, because it actually, a well-fitted medical mask, and there are lots of them now. Remember when there were before at the very beginning, very well-fitted medical mask, or if some people find that the commercial N95 fits them better, it's a smaller fit on the face. That is critical about keeping anything that's in your nose and your throat inside there, which goes along with staying home when you're sick of the vaccine. So those three fundamental things, I think, are really the ground that we can rest other things on.
Okay. Now let's get into a few specifics for anybody who may have missed it or may have only caught little bits and pieces. Let's go down what is going to happen tomorrow as far as reopenings go.
So big one is social gatherings up to 50 people indoors. I can tell you, honestly, that gives me a little bit of concern. I hope that people don't go there if you're sick. Like, make sure all the precautions in, because we had so many celebrations of life when someone became infected, you know, got COVID by being at that thing. So please, if you're going to go that big room with good ventilation, people are all screening themselves beforehand, more comfortable, but 100 people outdoors. That's exciting. So an organized public event can be up to 50 people indoors, versus a social gathering where you basically know the people. These are more likely people that you may not know. And then removing capacity limits in restaurants, bars, the gyms, the meeting spaces. Like, I think that's really going to be significant for those businesses. I think that's going to make a difference. And once again, think about screening beforehand, think about wearing the mask when you're there, think about keeping the distance when you can, think about washing your hands so that Omicron can stay on hard surfaces for almost a day. It's a hardy little virus. So I think doing the hand washing, all those things so that they can stay open.
Yeah.
And you don't get sick and you don't spread it to someone else.
Okay. So we'll be watching that closely. There's really no big weekend that's coming up where, I mean, we have Family Day weekend and so on, but it doesn't have the same traditions as other long weekends do, with big gatherings like turkey dinners and, you know, in the summer and so on. So there's not really that many big weekends to look at. Are we going to see another surge? But maybe tomorrow may be the day that we're looking back on in 10 days and wondering if you know, that's one of the things that added to an increase in cases. Hopefully not.
Yeah. Hopefully not. We know what to do. We know what to do. And this opening is because we know what to do, and do it.
That's it. Do it. Okay. So as we move on, we wanted to talk a little bit about testing today. Of course, there was a big, big change with rapid tests becoming available.
Yeah. So exciting news. I think that many people have been waiting for this. And I think now the critical thing is to think about how do we do the test at the right time and how do we do it well? And so the science table that you can go on and get there, they did a really lovely paper on rapid antigen tests. I think it came out last week. So if people are the Ontario Science Table, go on to it. I'll give you the highlights from it. The first thing is that there's a real difference in terms of how the rapid antigen tests behave with Delta and with Omicron. Omicron is more likely to cause sore throat and more likely to be sitting in your throat. Than your nose, which is really interesting, opposite of Delta. And so that when you're going to do the test, then the best way to do it is to do the buccal swab. So it's the lining of your mouth, both sides, swirl it around. And then in the back of your throat, back of your tongue, if you don't think you can get to the back of your throat, try and defer that gag reflex and swirl it around a few times there. And then take the do it into one nostril, swirl it around, and then into the other nostril, and then put it into the little fluid that you need to do. So if you do that, you have a much greater chance of picking up virus when it is there versus just doing the nose. So if you do the three, much better chance of picking up the virus, which is what you're doing, right? You're trying to see if you have virus in those places.
And when you say do, you know, up the nostril, you're not talking about like what they do when you go and you have one of the PCR
the tests. Nasopharynx, and when they go into the way into the back. No,
where it pokes out the back of your neck.
No.
No.
Yeah, my granddaughter said they tickled her brain.
Yeah, no, exactly.
See, no, so it's into the nasal, sort of the middle part of your nose, and swirl it around. So it's actually better than the nasopharyngeal swab. So I think that's the first thing to think about doing it really well. We have a really nice video up on the website that shows that in great and glorious fashion. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is that the test is best able to pick up virus after it has been there for a little bit. So if your symptoms start and then day one or two, you're thinking, if you do the test on day 3, 4, or 5, you're much more likely to pick up the virus because there's more of it by then. And so if you do it on 1 and 2 and you've got 2 negatives, you may be missing it. So really encouraging people to think about doing it when there's starts. So if you test on day 3 and it's negative and then test on day 4 and it's negative, then probably pretty sure it is negative. But if you test earlier, you might be missing it. And the whole reason to do the test is so you pick it up. So really encouraging how you do it, those 3 sites, and then think about doing it when you've settled into the symptoms, sort of day 3 or 4. And I think that you'll get a good result, which is what you want. And go on to the provincial website has you can type in the city or your town that you're in, and then they'll tell you what places are making them available. You get a kit of, so a little box that has 5 rapid antigen tests in it. So use it wisely. Because it's designed to pick up virus when you have symptoms, if you're using it and you don't have symptoms, then there's a good chance that there just won't, even if you're asymptomatic and have the virus, you won't have enough virus for the test to be picking it up. So really, I know that some people were using it, doing a test so that they could go and visit someone or something, recognizing that if you're doing it without symptoms, there's a good chance that it'll be a false negative. So don't use it instead of precautions, in other words.
Okay, makes a lot of sense. And also you did mention, of course, that it is pharmacies and certain grocery stores, not through the health unit.
No, we don't have any of them. I mean, we have it for our own staff, right? But we don't have any, no. So So go onto the provincial website, put in your town or your city, and then you'll find it where you can get it.
I like how you've called them, well, the health unit in this communique that I've gotten has called them rats.
No, it's so bad, eh?
Which is also what you say when you get there and they're all out.
Right.
It's true. So it's a good accurate.
Dear, I know. I said rapid antigen test. It just, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, rats. I mean, I don't mind the acronym at all.
Okay,
okay, let's talk vaccination. The numbers continue to inch up. Things continue to move in that right direction, and the kids continue to impress.
Yeah, I know. And I was just looking at the, did Sue give us the number? Yeah, that the for the kids, we're up to 36.5% of the 5 to 11s now have their third dose. And the teams at the clinics are saying the vast majority, second dose.
You said third. You're excited. I don't.
I'm excited about the third dose for the 12 to 17. that the clinics are mostly full of kids now. So I'm really, really pleased about that. And really, really pleased that the 12 to 17 year olds now can have their third dose of the vaccine. The province had initially opened it up to people who were more likely to have severe COVID infection. And then I think they did the right thing to say that that let's offer it to the 12 to 17 year olds as well, because it makes a difference. The third dose boosts your protection against symptoms all the way up to 61%. And by the time you're 6 months after the second dose, you don't have a lot of protection left, some, but not very much. So they boost the protection to 61% against symptoms and all the way up to 95% about for hospitalization. And that's all of us who got the third dose. And when you think that we want that age group to be in school, because if they develop symptoms, they're going to be out for the 5 days if they're fully vaccinated with the two. So they'll be able to be in school more, they'll be able to do their sports, their activities, like just all those good kinds of things. So really encourage that 12 to 17 as of Friday can get their third dose. You can go in and book an appointment today, as long as the appointment is for Friday and onwards for that. So I think the province did the right thing by offering to the teens as well.
Okay. And just having that vaccine, there's so many people who, like when Justin Trudeau got COVID a couple of weeks ago, they were saying, oh, well, he's the guy who's telling us to get vaccines, and then here he is getting it. Well, he didn't miss a second of work, and he didn't go to the hospital, and his symptoms were mild. And I'm just using him as an example because he's so in the spotlight, and everyone understands that. This is what the vaccine is doing.
Yeah.
People who are contracting COVID-19, who do catch it, who are triple dosed, aren't ending up in the hospital for the most part.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what it's supposed to do.
You have underlying health conditions.
Is that what we're seeing with these hospitalizations? Is it, you know, people who are triple dose, there's so few of them that actually need to go to the hospital if they don't have some sort of other health concern.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so that that's basically it. It's the underlying health condition, and the vaccine helps you cope with the virus along with your other conditions. So just so, so important. Yeah. So I think, 12 to 17 year olds, march on down, and lots of clinic appointments, lots of walk-ins. Very exciting. It's a good thing.
Healthunit.org or Lake 88, of course, in the afternoon news for the latest vaccination clinic locations every day here and on your website as well, healthunit.org.
And the critical thing is for that age group, it's 6 months after they've had their second dose. The reason for that is there is a concern about pericarditis and myocarditis in that age group. It's actually much higher in the 18 to 29 year old age group. And the research is that if you wait a longer interval between your doses, then the risk of pericarditis, myocarditis goes down. So that's why they're saying wait the 6 months. And most of them are at that 6 month now. That would have been if you got your second dose in August. So it's 6 months, and that will decrease the risk of the pericarditis, myocarditis. And we're using Pfizer, not Moderna with that age group, because the risk is much, much less with Pfizer than Moderna. So doing everything we can to really reduce the risk.
All right. Okay. Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay. There were a couple other, quick question. everything else is, the news has been dominated by what's been going on in Ottawa and Windsor and, you know, all of these other border crossings. And I don't know if we've missed it, but is there any update on vaccinations for children under five?
So we're looking at that really carefully. So understanding is that Pfizer has submitted it for approval in the States, and looking at it, they're looking at, my understanding is they're looking at a much smaller dose, 3 micrograms versus the 10 for the 5 to 11 and the 30 for people older than 11. And they're looking at a 3-dose primary series because they didn't get a really good response after the 2. So if it is approved in the States, then we're thinking potentially mid to late May may come here. That's all theoretical. It's all based on what happens. But that's sort of the timing that we may be looking at.
All right. A number of other things that we wanted to touch on here while we have the opportunity, and then we'll go to our Ask Dr. Stewart segment. One of them was that this is Sexual Health Week.
Yes. Is that exciting? The sexual health services that we provide are a large part around sexual health counseling, and about people's preference and their sense of who they are, and feeling comfortable within that, and also contraception and what kinds of contraceptive things are going to work for you, and also sexually transmitted infections, and so that we're pleased that we're going to be able to have more in-person services now, because things have settled down so much. So please go to the website. The idea behind this is that it's confidential. If the testing is done, it doesn't have to be in your name. It can be anonymous. Like, it really is a safe place for people who want to go and talk to a nurse, any age, anything to do with sexuality. The nurses are absolutely wonderful.
And of course, you can get information on that at healthunit.org, but you can also call the health unit as well if you would rather speak to someone directly.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The 1-844-369-1234. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. Now, speaking of changes and openings and closings, Family Day is coming up on Monday. And that means that there is a little bit of a break coming up for you folks at the health unit.
Yeah, which our staff have been working so hard, and there still will be some staff following up on the COVID and supporting long-term care and whatever, but the regular, the offices will be closed, so you won't be able to pick up your water bottle or drop it off to be tested and so on. So just to check on the website for those things as well.
Okay. All right. So let's get into this now. We have only a couple questions here for Ask Dr. Stewart, which is good because, as we discussed in the past, that means that there's no big, you know, surge or anything like that going on, but still a couple good questions today. Dr. Stewart, my daughter is Canadian, but lives in New Hampshire. She's married to a vaccinated American and has vaccinated 6-year-old and a non-vaccinated 3-year-old. Will any of them have to have a COVID test coming into Canada or leaving? And will any of them have to quarantine? They'll be traveling to Canada in March.
So I am not an expert on this. And I actually went on to the travel.gc.ca website. That is, I encourage this person to go there. I'll tell you the basics of it, because there are some very specific things, like you have to do the Arrive Canada app. So right now, if people are, if you're less than 5, then you don't have to be fully vaccinated and you don't have to be tested. But other people, even with being vaccinated, do have to be tested. Right now, it's a PCR test. It has to be done within 3 days of coming into Canada. That's changing though. And just like the States right now are accepting the rapid antigen test to enter into the States, then Canada is going to be doing that come the end of the month. So I would check that website, travel.gc.ca, and look at any updates that would be needed. They are still talking about doing random testing. I don't know how much longer that's going to continue, but fully vaccinated and then a test should be good enough. But make sure you fill in that Arrive Canada app.
Yeah, that's very important. Okay, so number 2, I am an essential caregiver to my 100-plus-year-old mother who lives in a retirement home. When do you expect that I will be able to receive my 4th dose of the COVID-19 vaccine? Another great question.
Yeah, so right now the residents of the long-term care retirement homes, the congregate living, can receive a fourth dose because they are likely to be immunocompromised. That's why they're in that kind of congregate setting. The province has not yet opened it up to the essential caregivers and the staff. So wait on that. I think that they'll be looking to see how the residents actually respond with a fourth dose, whether it seems to make a difference. Likely it will, and then whether they'll expand from there. So not right now. Stay tuned. We do whenever on our vaccine part of our website, we have all the information about who is eligible when. So if you want to keep on checking there, that's probably the best thing to do.
All righty. That's going to do it for our questions and for this week here, Dr. Stewart. If anybody does have a question for Dr. Stewart, please send it to us via email at info@lake88.ca. You are going to put in the subject line, ask Dr. Stewart. We'll get it here. And please send it to us before 10 a.m. on Wednesdays, and we'll make sure that the doctor gets it and then is able to answer your question live on the air. Were there any parting words that you had for our listeners this week, Dr. Stewart, maybe ahead of tomorrow's opening?
Yeah, I think celebrate that we're doing well as a community. You know, I think this has been a long 2 years. And so I think, so really, really be grateful that we have more opportunity. And as I said last week, think about the things you want to be doing and think about what you need to put in place so that you can do that and you don't get sick and you don't spread it to others. If you have the vaccine, even if you do encounter COVID, you're likely will be able to cope with it unless you have underlying conditions and so on. So I think live it and think what's important to you. Look out for each other.
All right, Dr. Stewart, thank you so much. You always look out for us here with all these visits and providing wonderful information. We're very grateful. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, bye-bye.
All righty. Dr. Paula Stewart, Medical Officer of Health, our guest here, as she is every Wednesday on In Focus. Now, tomorrow, Cornerstone Landing's Terry Lee Kelford and Maureen Running from the Canadian Federation of University Women will talk about the upcoming Coldest Night of the Year awareness event for youth homelessness. I'm Bob Perreault. Stay safe. Thanks for listening and have a wonderful afternoon.
In Focus on Lake 88.